This is the Nerd for a Living podcast, where we explore the lives and careers of people working in pop culture and genre entertainment industries. I'm your host, Adrian Buskey. In this episode, you will find it very obvious that I'm excited to talk with Ildi Modrovic, co-showrunner of Lucifer, which is about to wrap its second season on Fox. Here at Nerd for a Living HQ, we are big fans of Lucifer. The show is based on the Vertigo comic series by Mike Carey and Peter Gross, which originally spun out of the pages of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. The TV series expands on a concept introduced in the Lucifer comics, of the Morning Star abandoning hell to live in modern-day Los Angeles, running a bar called Lux alongside his demonic companion Mazikeen. The show departs from the source material's high fantasy mythology by grounding it as a police procedural, with the fallen angel assisting LA detectives, in his own unique, self-absorbed way, while combating supernatural conflicts and balancing a dysfunctional family of earthbound celestials. The beauty of the show, though, is how it blends procedural, mythological, and horror elements with a surprising amount of humor. Over two seasons, the writing staff and everyone in the cast have proven to have incredible ability at comedy. For what's billed as a drama, Lucifer is consistently laugh-out-loud funny, and the chemistry of the cast and the smart, often subversive screenwriting and direction make it one of my favorite can't-miss TV shows. Our guest, Ildi Modrovic, is Lucifer's co-showrunner, alongside Joe Henderson, as well as a writer and executive producer. Some of her other notable writing and producing credits come from CSI Miami, Californication, and Necessary Roughness. Ildi and I's discussion of Lucifer delves into the themes, production process, and character evolutions on the show. Fans should enjoy our discussion of its humor, fantastic cast, and how much fun it is to create. We also discuss Ildi's career path from musician to writer to producer. All of that coming up next in this Nerd for a Living interview with Ildi Modrovic. Thank you so much for joining us on the Nerd for a Living podcast. We are at the point of this recording, 1 week away from the season finale of season two of Lucifer. And I have to tell you, I mean, like, I'll get the fanboy stuff out of the way. Like, we are big fans of Lucifer in our household. Been on board since the show started and absolutely love it. So we're really, really excited to get you on here because we've been like chasing you for like a year, like trying to get you guys on the show.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah. So, if you look at your IMDb listing, your executive producer and a writer, but I think you're technically a showrunner, right, for the show?
Yeah, co-showrunner with Mr. Joe Henderson, who's in the other room with the our entire staff right now as we speak.
Have you guys already started working on season three at this point then?
We started yesterday, so yesterday was our first day.
Is that unusual in this day and age to already be working on the next season before the end of the current season is done?
Yes. The main reason that happened is because, well, Fox took a little break to launch a new show in the middle of last season, basically. So our run was interrupted with 24 and APB.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
So, yes, normally we would have been done airing before we started meeting on. Last week I was in a mix for the very last episode. So, yeah, just the train keeps moving.
Was there a certain point where they were talking about moving the back half last 4 to 6 episodes to a third season or something, and then they brought it back? It was really kind of confusing, yeah.
It was confusing for us as well. we thought there were going to be 18 episodes, and we had kind of planned on that all along, and we had, carefully, lovingly crafted an arc. And then pretty much at the last minute, they added 4 more episodes. But they said, here's what we're not going to screw you into having to, fluff up your season arc. You just do 4 standalone episodes that can go anywhere. And we're like, that's awesome. And yet for a show that's serialized, we were like, okay, let's see. This is a new thing. So, but we ended up having so much fun doing them. And we thought about all our favorite like X-Files standalones, and some of the X-Files episodes that were standalones were my favorites. And that's kind of actually where we started. We kind of watched all of those again and went, right, you can actually move the characters forward. You know what I mean? Move who they are forward without moving the mythology forward necessarily. So even if they air next season, they're hopefully not going to feel like we're, you know, treading water, hopefully. And they're all so different. Like, we did one that's maze centric. We did one that's like a Vegas jaunt. We did a kind of a Twilight Zone sort of an episode. And then we did a flashback origin story of when Lucifer first arrives in Los Angeles.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I think Lucifer is an interesting show because you're taken from, originates in Sandman and then has the Mike Carey run, you know, from Vertigo. And the seeds of that are definitely in the show, but it's very much its own entity. You know, you took this big otherworldly religion based concept and then put it into a procedural that's both serialized, but then has, you know, these big continuity arcs running over the top of it. So it kind of gives you best of both worlds. But probably also a little bit of tangle of making sure you're managing that continuity all the time with it as well, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, there was, especially at the beginning, there was many discussions between us and the studio and the network, because they really wanted a procedural, you know, where the episodes can stand alone and be aired out of order. That's great for international. It's great for, you know, kind of the business of it. But we knew that to be true to the comic books, or at least the part that we wanted to stick to, was some of the mythology. We knew that a show like this, like Buffy or you know, a show like this, depends on the mythology a little bit, that our audience is not going to care about solving crime so much. and that is the spine, that's the skeleton you hang everything on. It's great. It's a great engine for story. Procedural, I ain't gonna lie. It's great to solve a crime because it just gives you an automatic story. But we knew that the stuff that we cared about and that our audience was gonna care about was just the relationships and the exploration of Lucifer, the fallen, you know, the rebellious kid.
I think it's really fun that you have, you know, you do have this enormous mythological figure, religious figure, and these characters that are populated from that, and yet so grounded in the humanity of them in their interactions. And, you know, taking a character like Lucifer, who's, you know, obviously a little polarizing in the, and the greater understanding.
Love him. There's this million moms, big fans.
I always think that's a, you know, a positive mark whenever you get one of their campaigns against you. You know, personally, I think it's awesome.
You know what? I'm with you. Yeah.
So at what point did you come on board with the show?
Right before the pilot aired. It was about, it was a crazy, chaotic moment. It was about a week and a half before it was going to shoot. And Tom Kapanos, who was the original writer, had another show on the CW, basically. And he was like, you know what? I think I'm going to stick with that one. And so I came on, and this studio and network really wanted more procedural. And so I did some kind of frenzied rewrites in a week and a half. And then was on board ever since. So I was there for the pilot and rewrites on the pilot. And yeah.
Every TV show has like an organic development. When you first start off the pilot through, like, you know, midway through first season, there always seems to be like an awareness of what works and what the cast does best and what the writers do best.
Yeah.
And what I think is really interesting about Lucifer is that the first, like, probably six episodes or so feel like they're dark, they're procedural, there is humor, but it's like, it's probably third or fourth tier, at least to me as a viewer. And then it felt like somewhere along the lines you guys realized just how funny this cast is.
Yeah.
And suddenly there seemed to be this greater balance of like, you know, the darkness is still there, the horror elements are there, the, you know, all of the other thematics, but the show's hilarious now. And then in the second season, you know, you got Amy Garcia, who's also really funny. And then I think also like, second season, it feels like Leslie Ann Brandt, like as Maze, really, really came forward as far as this greater sense of humor as well.
Absolutely. She blossomed, if you will. I feel like she, along with her character, you know, they found her own voice, kind of thing. Like, when, you know, her arc in season two was, okay, why am I here? What am I supposed to do? What's, you know, if Lucifer's going to stay here, I guess I got to stay here too. I got to find my own thing. I got to stop living for this man, if you will. And the more she did that, the more she, as a character, and I feel like as an actress, kind of found her voice, and she's so funny. So funny.
What was that discovery process like? I mean, in the writer's room, you know, as the showrunner, as you're moving along, you know, is that a conscious development? Are you guys thinking about that in the room? Are you talking about it, that's the voice you're finding?
Yeah. But, you know, like you said, they start talking to you, kind of. They start telling you as you watch them. I mean, every day at lunch, when we're filming, we watch the dailies and we see immediately what works and what doesn't work. A lot of rooms, I don't think, do that, you know, watch the dailies on a daily basis. But it helps because you go, oh, that more of that, like a Menadeal. The more we put him in not silly situations, but he is this pious, proud figure. And when he's doing improv, let's say, it's very funny. And, you know, you put him because he's so very earnest and sincere. And, you know, there's in the flashback episode that's going to air next season, unfortunately, in the origin story, he is so funny because he doesn't understand. He puts on human clothes and they're mismatched. And he's like, I look good. You know, things like that are just priceless. And yeah, and they start kind of dictating that to us, you know. That's right.
Well, and like having, like, you know, Tom Ellis, who has such a playful nature, and then, like you said, D.B. Woodside has, like, in his Menadeal, it's like, it's so earnest, it's so serious, it's like, it's so emotive. I mean, I don't know that there's anybody who you can just catch on screen at any given time without saying a word, and he just exudes emotion in such a huge way. Yep. So balancing those two people against each other is so fun, and like, it's so much chemistry. I mean, and then at what point in season two were you like, you know what, let's just have Lucifer's mom show up and let's put Trisha Helfer, who, like, it just exudes sex appeal in such an enormous way, because that's gonna really throw people for a loop. I mean, that was crazy.
I know we got a little flack for you know, casting someone who's practically Lucifer's age, but that was the whole point. The whole, it's so funny to be oddly attracted to your own mom, and you're like, no, wait. And Tom even said, he said, you know, I had such a crush on her from Battlestar Galactica that, you know, he was like, this is going to add a whole other Oedipal layer to that. Like, I won't be able to control. But yeah, she's perfect. And I have to tell you, we actually wrote the part for her. And that's rare, too, that you actually get the person that inspired the character. And she just is amazing. And in fact, so amazing that we had to bring her back for season 3.
Does that count as a spoiler at this point? I have to admit, like, I'm one episode behind. I am caught up to the point of God Johnson, which I wanted to say was actually one of my favorite episodes so far. That was so good.
Mine too. I'm so glad you say that. Mine too. I have a special warm spot in my heart for that episode. But it's kind of a spoiler, but you don't know how she's going to come back, because you never know in a show like Lucifer. Like, she could come back as a demon, she could come back as, you have no idea in what capacity, because mom is inhabiting her body. So will it still be mom? Will it be someone else? You just don't know. So that I will not reveal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys did put together, I think, one of the best casts on television. They are so much fun to watch every week, in and out. And the more that they've gotten to play with each other, putting Tom Ellis against Kevin, you know, as, you know, Detective Dan, like, every time that they just get a scene, just the two of them together, it's so fun.
I know. I love them. And so unattractive, all of them, right? Just so terrible to look at. There's not an ugly one in the bunch, I know. Yeah, well, that's the other thing that we got to play with season 2 is these weird combinations, you know. And we're even thinking as we work on season 3, like, who hasn't been together? Amenadiel and Ella, for instance. What would that be like? It started to become really fun to just pair people up. And whenever we did, we were, again, like, they're talking to us at that point. They're like, wow, that's a great combination. We need more of that. You know, Maze and Linda was, yes, kind of a trial by error. I mean, really, we just stuck them together in one scene, and we were like, this is so great. I mean, it's such a beautiful friendship and so strange, but such a great look at two completely different women and how they can come together and form a friendship. And it got really sweet very, very quickly between them. So yeah, that's our favorite relationship.
Rachel Harris is like, I feel like your guys' secret weapon, because, you know, as an interesting way of exploring the thought process of those various characters and having that first human on the other side of it, who's the only one who actually knows the truth of this, you know, even though Lucifer is never quiet about it. I mean, I love that there's no secret identity for him. No, like, he just walks around. I'm Lucifer Morningstar.
I'm the devil. What do you mean? Right?
Yeah.
my dad. Yeah, he's always... Yeah, he never hides it. That was also something really refreshing about the character, I think, from the first episode. But I did want to say about, you know, just keeping our characters grounded and everything. Something you said at the very beginning of the conversation. We really, from the beginning, thought of them only as a family. That was the way, because we're like, okay, we're dealing with Lucifer, we're dealing with God, we're dealing with, you know, and when Mom came along, the goddess of all creation, if you will, like these giant entities. And we just, every time we approached a story, we went, well, we have to think of them as Mom and Dad and the rebellious teenager, you know, and then the perfect son who is Amenadiel and the child who is Maze. You know what I mean? We just kept looking at them as this family, and that always brings it back to something kind of manageable and relatable for everybody.
Do you ever have like a careful dance about like just how far you can push some of the themes? I mean, like in the God Johnson episode, I mean, there's a part where like where Lucifer is just straight up like, my dad is a dick, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
He says my dad is a dick. Yeah. we can't believe we got away with that one, actually. Well, the funny thing is, too, is we're trying not to make anybody a villain, because the whole point, not to get all, you know, esoteric, but the whole point of Lucifer, really, our show and our take on him is that if the worst being of all creation and all time can be forgiven, isn't that divine? Isn't that what, let's say, Christianity or religion is all about? If the worst of us can be forgiven. So along with that, we don't want to make God the bad guy either. That, you know, he's this mysterious guy who, works in, you know, mysterious ways. And it's really us who make ourselves the villain or the hero. We can't blame anybody. We can't go, that's dad's fault, or that's my, you know. That's what we're doing. We're trying not to make God a bad guy, the goddess a bad, you know, that was important when she came on. We didn't want to make our female archetype, you know, our strong female character, the bad guy either. We wanted to understand that, you know, what she was after and what was driving her, which was, I want to be with my family. We can all get that, you know, especially after a divorce, let's say. You're like, you know, I want my kids. I want my home back. That's all I want, you know.
I like that you can take those huge concepts and boil them down to the human experience and explore them in a very relatable way that, you know, even though the magnitude of things is much bigger than your standard family, you know, you have that level of exploration for it.
And I think that's why we can get away with, you know, calling God a dick, if you will, because that's what Lucifer thinks. That's his experience. You know, that's not... We're not saying he's a dick. We're saying that's what Lucifer thinks. So yeah, we try to, but at the same time, we do like to kind of get in little, you know, religious philosophies every now and again.
Yeah, and again, like with the you know, the Dr. Martin character with Rachel Harris, then you get that outside person to kind of poke at things and be like, is that really what you feel? Is that actually what's happening there? You know, and turn those things around.
Exactly, like in the God Johnson episode when Lucifer is watching his parents, or who he, you know, thinks that are his parents, dance, and he gets this like little boy look on his face. And, you know, so you sure you want them to get together so that they can destroy each other? That's not what's going on. You, like any kid, kind of have this odd fantasy of your parents getting back together. That's one of my favorite moments in that episode, actually.
Also inspired casting with Timothy Omundson. Am I saying his name right?
You sure, Omundson. And he actually is another one. I remember turning on the... you know, Galavant, right? And watching that in the room going, that's God. He's our God. And he became the inspiration for that character, you know? And then again, we got him. We were so excited. That's rare. We did it twice, I guess, with God and Goddess.
Well, you know, like you said, like, I mean, you have a ridiculously attractive cast, but they are, even that you take somebody, you know, like Lauren German, who looks like herself, looks like a supermodel, yet is so expressive and so silly and pulls such great faces, particularly.
She's a nerd. She is such a geek. And I swear to God, she's one of the funniest people on the cast. She cracks me up. I can't even tell you, like, we have tapped barely into her silly nature on the show, and I hope to just get more and more of it. There was one episode at the very beginning, I think it was mine. Oh yeah, where she's just doing this like nerdy dance to the to some music, and I'm like, that. And I remember, you know, people, social media and stuff going like, oh my God, we love her in that moment. And like, yeah, she's so that person. She's not this kind of uptight, you know, straight person. She's not. So it's kind of funny for her to be playing that.
The episode where it places her verse alongside Maze, where they're playing like the two moms at the yes. Academy.
Yes.
You know, again, that idea, like that pairing people up and seeing like how the dynamic works and what happens. And you have like with Chloe, it's like so straight laced and so trying to keep her stuff together all the time. And then Maze is completely out there and crazy. And so that those dynamics are perfect. And I got to think that on the writer's side, that you guys, every time you're like, the idea of putting those characters together and just exploring what happens has to be so exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the more opposite, and you know, that they're very opposite. When we pitched season two that they were going to move in together, I mean, we were met with like laughter, just you know, like we're like, no, it's the quintessential odd couple. It's going to be fantastic. We just have to come up with a reasonable buy, you know, why they're doing this. And then I'm telling you, it's like going to be gold. And that's to say, you know, Menadiel and Lucifer are complete opposites. And, you know, Lucifer is learning how to give a shit. He's learning how to care. He's learning how to feel something. And somebody like Chloe is going to help him do that. But meanwhile, Chloe needs to be taught how to have some fun. So Lucifer is great for her, and Maze is great for her, because they pull all that out of her too. And so it's a little yin yang thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, the goddess shows up at Detective Dan's, you know, apartment for the booty call too, which he doesn't know that's what's going on with it or what's happening. But the look on his face every time he's in a scene with Trisha Helfer, that like, like the light is too bright in my face and I'm trying to look away, but I cannot, you know.
Exactly. Oh my God. He's the end of that episode, God Johnson, when she's like, I just want to be held with your pants off. She's funny too, man. She's got perfect comic timing. God.
Well, that was the beauty, like you were saying, like bringing Timothy in, you know, and putting him in that scene with Trisha, where I was like, oh, that's like the one believable person who actually does seem to be able to hold up to the power of her charm. You know, like that dance sequence. Like, I mean, I felt like us in our own living room had that same look Lucifer had, like, aw, you know. Yeah.
Not easy to find somebody who can meet Trisha eye to eye, literally.
Right.
He's a very tall man. Yeah, no, he's got those ridiculously magical eyes that you just go, oh, you're in his spell when you, yeah.
I imagine everybody on set has a good time with this show too, just because it seems like everybody is very game. It's a fun cast to follow on Twitter, because they're so intertwined. They have so many great interactions between each other. And I think that stuff is important for this day and age, you know, for audiences. We love to see shows that we really enjoy and see that interaction where it seems like everybody's having fun too. It seems like a very important part of it.
Yeah. I mean, for a show called Lucifer, I always say this, you know, to my relatives who go, you're doing what, dear? You know, I've never worked with a better, and people say this and you're like, yeah, but I really have never worked with a better, nicer, more fun cast than this cast. They're so, and it starts with Tom. Like, Tom is, I think that's why he's such a perfect Lucifer, is because he's such a nice, good, kind person. He's such a sensitive person. And then he's a geek and a funny, you know, guy too. And he's hilarious. Like, so many of the lines are his improv, by the way.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's quite a few in there. It comes through, you know, even when he's being evil, if you will, he wants to be, it's not that he wants to be good, he just wants to connect. He wants to have meaning in his life, and that comes through in his character because that's how he is as a person. He's amazing. He's ridiculously lovely as a person.
It shows in everything with the cast, like the interactions in the program itself, because there is so much heart for a show that you could have easily not have had that to it. That emotion, that heart, that connection is there. And I think that's, you know, when I look at the fandom, when I talk to people who love the show like we do, you know, it's, we don't show up for, like you said earlier on, like we don't show up for the procedural or even necessarily the plot of it. We show up for the characters because every episode, I'm just so excited to be back with them. You know, when it came back from hiatus and I found out, like super last minute, I was like, oh my gosh, it's actually coming back this season. I was so excited to have that time back with those characters. So, but I want to swing back around on you and talk about, like, you know, we talked about how you got involved with the show, but I want to talk about your career arc. And, you know, and I did my, you know, the prerequisite internet stalking though, and I saw that you have a background as a musician, and the and the name of that band seemed highly familiar. When I thought about a recent episode, so
a little shout out to my band. That's right.
Yeah, so I saw the Heavy Woolies, and I was like, "Wait a minute, I know that name. That's familiar. We just saw that."
I know. One of the best things about becoming a writer is like I can name bad guys my friend, you know, after my cousins or people I like and don't like, and I can give a shout out to my band. Actually, there's a brief clip moment of a song of ours too in that episode when we go to the whiskey. You know, there's a flyover where it's just the beginning riff of our song and the opening band, if you will, that the band that's on stage is singing just a second of our song. But yeah, I did not always plan to be a writer. I wanted to be a rock star. Did not work out. But I squandered my 20s. So that was good. And I had so much fun. It was just, it was almost as a lark. We started this band, a bunch of us from college, and we started to get better and better. And then we started playing and people liked us and we started writing our own songs and suddenly we were a band. Then I started writing kind of at the end of my 20s with a friend of mine. We wrote a movie, an English period piece, because those are hot. And then we wrote a pilot that we actually sold to FX and developed with them. And then suddenly I was writing. But I was very lucky. But then I was also a hard worker, I will say. I worked really hard. That's kind of my journey. And then my first job was CSI Miami.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the thing. Like you go look at the IMDb page and you see CSI Miami and you're listed on there as a co-producer. And in my experience, usually talking to people who are working in the Hollywood machine is that like IMDb shows the stuff where the titles start becoming like the really noticeable stuff. But there's usually a whole like litany of background work that they've done before it. But you just topped right in?
No. I started as a staff writer.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Staff writer. And I was half of a partnership. I mean, I had a partner at the time. And then at the end of the second season, we went our separate ways and I stayed on CSI Miami as a solo. And so, I started at the beginning, lowest of the lows, if you will, staff writer and then story editor and then executive story editor. Yeah. No. Probably the only one that's listed on IMDb is where I left. I don't know. But no, that's where I cut my teeth, if you will. That was my learning place, my classroom.
Well, that's a lot of evolution on one show. So, I mean, you know, coming in as a staff writer, coming up, you know, going out as co-producer. And then, I mean, then you worked on Californication and 11th Hour, Necessary Roughness, Forever, which is, you know, has some genre elements to it as well. But how did you become a pick then for Lucifer? How did you, your personal brand and your body of work make sense when they're like, we need a showrun for this? And you know, you're co-running the show, but how did that work out where they were like, you're the person for us?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's funny because a lot of times, like anything, you start somewhere and people tend to go, oh, that's what you do. And since I started on a procedural, I became procedural girl kind of. And I kind of broke out of it a little bit when I went to Californication and Necessary Roughness, let's say, was also a little character-based, more comedic. But I still... people still kind of wanted to put me in the procedural bin. But I developed a couple shows with Warner Brothers and Bruckheimer as the production company, Jerry Bruckheimer. And those people knew I wanted to write character, dramedy, funny, a little bit funny, you know. And I had done a couple pilots with them that were like that. So when this came up, they're like, hey, we need somebody who knows procedural, but can also wants to do, is dying to do something more character-based. And so that's how they asked me is because of our experience together. As far as the genre goes, again, I love genre. I never got to do it. I've never, you know, nobody's given me a chance to do it, but I love genre. It's like one of my favorite things to watch. So, it's kind of, you know, people know, they start to know what you like, and never mind your credits. They go, hey, we want to take a chance on you doing this.
That's awesome. Did you have to do a deep dive on the subject matter when you got into it, or was a lot of thinking already there on the page beforehand?
The character of Lucifer was really like, that's what Tom Kapanos did so well. I mean, that character was very clear in the pilot when I came aboard. Like, that was the clearest thing. And yeah, I mean, I read all the Lucifers. I read every single one. And but we did realize, and you were talking about this at the beginning, that we couldn't do that in a TV show. We couldn't do what Mike Carey did. I mean, it's so fantastical and it's so large, and you would just, special effects and money wise, you just could never live up to that bar that he creates in this beautiful comic book. So we knew we wanted to do kind of something between Sandman and Lucifer. Kind of when he goes to Los Angeles, it's kind of a blip in the comic books. I mean, he's there for I think one of the volumes, the first volume, he's in this club, Lux, but then the rest isn't. We're like, let's live in that place. Let's just kind of, you know, open that up and make an entire show about that time period. And so then we could ground it because we're in Los Angeles. That's the deep dive is I read all the Lucifers, and I'd already read Sandman ages ago. So I kind of looked over that again, but I love that comic book, always have. So.
Well, and the show has a lot of little subtle nods, you know, to the source material and stuff, too. I mean, my favorite is the Halloween episode where Maze reveals the side of her face while she's out with Trixie. And that was like, I've read the comics, but my wife hasn't. So that scene happens and, you know, and we're in the living room watching it and I geek out like really hard. And she's looking at me like, I'm guessing that's a thing. And I was like, it's a thing. It's a big thing.
Yeah, she has to hide her. I love that scene too. I love that Trixie's like, cool.
You know? Yeah. Well, and again, like, you know, to find a kid that's as funny and just works so well along with it all as Scarlett does too. Like, I mean, like, just so funny. Like, that again, well, there's the recent The Academy episode, or I forget what his title was, but like where Lucifer takes her in as his fake daughter and the whole interaction with them, and it's so fun. Yeah.
They're a great combo too. Yeah. It's so fun to just stick two random characters together if you want and let them play. It's like, yeah, they're little action figures kind of.
So before we wrap up, I just want to kind of find out like what your typical day is as a showrunner. And maybe there isn't a typical one, but like, you know, how do you usually spend your time? Because you're also a writer too. Like, did you write the upcoming finale, season finale?
I did.
Yeah. So that's a lot of work on your shoulders.
You know, it is pretty nutty. Like people say it's, hey, before I started showrunning, I was like, I don't think I want to do that. That looks hard. Like, people don't have lives. But it's fantastic with Joe because we get to split the job, and we really do. We, you know, there are some showrunning teams or, you know, things that are run by more than one person, and they need to have a say in everything. But what Joe and I do is we alternate odds and evens. And so even though we were there for everything, like I sign off on every story we break, he signs off on every story we break. Production wise, I had, like last year, I headed the evens. and he oversaw the odds. So when you have a production meeting and you have to okay locations and wardrobe and casting, and you have to make sure the rewrites are done and in, you know, on time, that's up to me if it's an even, and it's up to him if it's an odd. So I can be in the room when he's in pre-production on his episode and vice versa. And again, even though we come in, it's not that, you know, everything doesn't go through our eyeballs, and same with editing, we still get to separate those duties a bit. And it's so helpful. I don't know if I could ever do it by myself, to be honest. I just think it's so much work. And yeah, you never really understand that watching TV. What do those people do with the producer in their name? Like, what do they do? But there's just phone calls and notes, and constantly, you're constantly on the phone, you're constantly reading things, watching casting, approving that, you know. So it's kind of a full-time job, as they say.
Are you on set very often?
That's one of my favorite things, and that's a bummer that I don't get to do that quite as much. But yes, for my episodes, I'm usually on half the time. And again, the only reason I can do that is because Joe's manning the ship while I'm on set. Because I think being on set is, first of all, it's the magic, because you get so much fun. It never gets boring to me. But secondly, you really do learn how to write better. It's the same with editing. You go, oh, I didn't need that line. And if you're on set, you can go, don't say that. If Tom says something funny and I'm giggling at the monitors, I'm like, oh my God, say that again. It's a live thing. You're creating it kind of as you go. And you're also able to go, that's not the tone I wanted for that. Or I pictured, you know, ooh, let's pull back on the tears. You know, I didn't really picture that. You can have a say in that kind of stuff.
The Lucifer Writers Room is out there on Twitter, so people can follow it. We see a lot of, you know, them communicating with the fans. I thought it was awesome just the other day. I saw like that their account like congratulating like one of the like your staff people for like leveling up to a writer on the staff like an assistant. That's exciting to see, and to see like that evolution and growth and that kind of fun stuff. So, I mean, as a fan, like being a person outside of it, you know, seeing both the finished product and the communication of the team and the love that gets kind of spread around through all of it is really, really cool. Before I let you go, the last thing I want to ask is, what other awesome stuff are you taking in now? I mean, in as much as you have time to, because I'm sure there's not a lot, like what other things are you geeking out about?
Well, right now I'm currently obsessed with The Handmaid's Tale. Have you watched that yet on Hulu?
I'm scared to. Just with the state of existence, I like sometimes stuff like that can be really tough for me, where I'm like, oh gosh, that feels too close to where we're going. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I'm obsessed with it. I actually listened to the book on tape at the same time I started watching it, and Claire Danes reads the book.
Oh wow.
And oh my God. And first of all, it's just this beautiful, I can't believe I'd never read it in high school or whatever, but it's this beautifully written, like poetic, gorgeous book, and you're hanging on every word Claire Danes says. It's such a different kind of sci-fi. There's a thing at the end of the audiobook where Margaret Atwood talks about how she wanted to make sure everything she did was drawn from history. So, and there's nothing fictional, if you will, in it. It's all things that, you know, combination of things that have happened or are happening, if you will. And that's what makes it is terrifying. But I can't look away. You know, it's like a car crash. I'm like, oh no, we are gonna end up that way. You know, it's good to watch stuff like that. Cautionary tales. They're good. They're good.
Yeah.
Keep you aware. Try to, you know, with certain people in the White House and whatnot. Yeah.
Frighteningly plausible is, I feel like shows like that and things like Man in the High Castle are kind of important for kind of giving us glimpses into things where we can go, oh, this could have happened or it can happen. It's not fantastical. It's really like we're on the cusp of it at any given time, depending on how the pendulum swings in our own culture. And it's good to be reminded that those things are possible, even though it's not fun to be reminded of it.
Oh yeah. I mean, I geek out quite, I've watched Walking Dead from the first episode and I'm a huge fan of that. And it's the same kind of thing. Yeah. It's zombies. And it seems, you know, if you just say that, it's ridiculous, but just the mentality and that show is not about zombies. And I try to tell people that all the time if they don't watch it. And I'm like, no. It's about hope in the face of hopelessness, you know, and that can happen. You know, whether or not there's zombies running around, that's the least of their concerns. It's all the humans that are the true danger in that show. You know, Negan, do you watch that show?
Well, I had read the original source material, like the first six trades or so, you know, and I watched like most of the first season of Walking Dead. I have a hard time staying in a universe that's that dark that long.
Yeah, there's no humor.
Yeah. I'm a pretty upbeat personality overall. And I mean, and I love dark films and dark subject matter in small doses, but man, it's like it wears me down after a little while and I have to kind of like veer in and out of it a little bit.
Oh, there was one episode and people talked about it, but where I couldn't go to sleep, and that has never happened. I can watch, violence doesn't bother me, nothing, you know? And it was so emotionally dark and horrible and just ugly that I couldn't shake it for like a week. Yeah, but I like that because things, you know, you get a little numb. I like things to smack me on the head sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I think it's like a long-term like viewer of stuff like that. Most of the time I feel like pretty impervious, you know? I'm not bothered by ultraviolence and dark themes usually don't get to me. So, you know, whereas like I'll watch things with my wife and she has that, like she's a little more sensitive to some of those and she'll be like, you know, that's just a little much for me. But when something does pierce the veil, when it does come through and shake me up, you know, and I have to, you know, sit back and be like, I mean, it's odd things like Ex Machina when that came out, excellent film. And I watched it like by myself at like, you know, midnight and then was up for like another 3 hours with just my head spinning from just all the ideas. Yeah. And that's the stuff when I'm like, it's really affecting. And that's when I feel like you've created great art, because even if it's not a pleasant feeling afterwards, it's generated, a thought process that you wouldn't have otherwise. Yeah. Yes.
If you get a reaction, I mean, there's so many things you watch where it just washes over you. The other thing that you might like, I don't know, have you seen Santa Clarita Diet?
I have not had time to get to it yet. I've heard that's one is really, really dark humor.
Very, very dark, dark comedy. But at least it's fun. It's funny. It's very, very, very funny. Super dark. You know, they're eating people. But spoiler. But. God, it's just, I don't know. Timothy Oliphant is, oh my God, you just never liked him more than in this show. He's so funny. And so is Drew Barrymore. She's adorable. She's always adorable.
Yeah, that's kind of her brand. Yeah. I have to get to that one. Well, you know, and people make a lot about like the golden age of TV, but it is, I mean, that there's just a sheer like enormous output of brilliant filmmaking and television going on and across so many different venues now with like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and then, you know, broadcast television, you know, upping its game continuously to go along with it too. Being in the nerd space, it's so exciting to have such like exciting programming that, you know, 10 years ago, a comic book TV show would be laughed at. And now, you know, it's some of the best high caliber TV that we have on.
What are you watching right now? Just I need to hear.
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I was excited to have that one run up. We're binge watching Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, the third season of that just dropped. And I absolutely, that show is so absurdist. But again, the characters, like, I just love being with them. And
I've never seen it. Oh, I should check it out.
Oh okay. Gosh. Unbreakable. Yeah. It's a Netflix show and it's, the third season just came out and it's so much fun. And they're short, you know, so they're 20-25 minutes. So you can blow through a lot of them quickly. And it's, and that's a good time. I need Handmaids is on my list. I'm also a big animation fan, so I'm always trying to like binge on stuff from there too. But I feel like I should know better all the things I get to. But you know, as a person with a bunch of side hustle and a bunch of, you know, I find myself working more than consuming. Oh, The Magicians. That's the other thing I've been really absorbed in.
I read that book ages ago.
Yeah.
I was, and when I read it, I thought that's going to make a great TV show. That's sort of on my list too. Oh, so many.
Yeah, that one's strong. It deviates pretty significantly from the source material, like in its second season, but in good ways, I think. The book initially, the characters are kind of, it's like all dickhead magicians, you know? It's like everybody's kind of a jerk. The TV show doesn't change that. I mean, they're kind of all awful, but the cast is so good that you do enjoy them and you go along with it, and it's a lot of fun, and its exploration of what magic in the real world would mean is a good time too. So yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And then as soon as I finish that one up this season, then I'm off to The Expanse.
Yeah, that's another one that's on my list. And actually one of our writers worked on that show, Jason Ning. And one of my best friends actually directed several of those, Terry McDonough. And I only saw the first like half of the first. It's like a 2 hour, I think.
The pilot's fantastic. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he directed that. My friend Terry McDonough. I'm so proud.
Oh well, yeah. Go pat him on the back because it's so good. Yeah.
I've been meaning to watch. You've just reminded me. I'm going to stick that right at the top.
Yeah, the books are great too. If you enjoy space opera, the novels by James S. A. Corey, which is a writing team that are directly involved in the TV series,
yes,
really really good. But they're huge, so make some time because they're like big voluminous books. but they move. So I mean, they're books that I've blown through on like 4 hour flights because they're so good that I just get in and go. So
all right,
yeah, they're awesome. Well, I know that you guys have a lot going on. A few times I think I've heard like maybe the team off in the other room being loud and obnoxious, so yeah.
They're very loud and they laugh an annoying amount, so yeah.
It sounds like a great environment to be a part of. Thank you so much for joining us on this. So Lucifer's season finale is coming up soon. Season 3 has been, you know, set in motion and is renewed. That was an exciting day for us to hear that and know that that was coming, because again, we love the show so much. It's absolutely one of my favorite things on TV right now.
Oh my god, makes me so happy. Thank you.
And where should we be following you, like, and keeping up with you?
I am on Twitter. Believe it or not, it's a love-hate relationship I have with Twitter. But it's what's my handle? I'll just look up Ildi Modrovich and it'll pop up, right?
Yeah, I think you're the only one.
Yeah, I think I am.
Yeah. It's always handy to be that person. I'm one of those two where there's only one of me. Yeah. So it's, yeah, that's handy.
There's really only one of all of us, right?
Well, we should hope so. Really, this has been great. We're super excited about, you know, what's coming up. And I've got an episode to catch up in yet, but that's always nice for me too, because that means this evening I've got another episode of Lucifer, which always makes me happy. So thank you.
It was a good one too. I think you're going to really like it. Yeah. Thank you. This has been really fun. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Nerd for a Living podcast. The season 2 finale of Lucifer airs Monday, May 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on Fox. You can see full episodes now on Fox.com and on Hulu. The Nerd for a Living podcast is produced by Wendy Buskey and me, Adrian Buskey. You can subscribe to the Nerd for a Living podcast on Apple Podcasts and many other apps and services. Follow us to continue getting great conversations with geeky professionals. We're on Twitter and Facebook as Nerd for a Living, all one word. You can also come chat with me on Twitter, where I tweet as, predictably, Adrian Buskey. And you can find a full archive of our episodes at our website, nerdforaliving.com. This podcast is a production of Armadian Media. Thanks for listening, and as always, keep leveling up and live nerdy.